and go. Oh my God! Langston, that could have been you, Elizabeth had said while reading the article in the Post. To make ends meet all those years ago, he'd worked as a weekend security guard in the building in addition to his other jobs as a maintenance man and barber. On the day of the robbery and murder, however, he wasn't at his post, having asked for and received the day off to celebrate Mother's Day with Elizabeth and Liza. He remembered Elizabeth's silent tears as she continued to read. It was Mac Lang's first week on the job, so when the alarm sounded, bank employees heard security supervisor Jim Taylor say, "Come with me, Mac. You need to learn how to do this stuff." Both men were found dead in the hallway outside the control room. The final remaining guard was discovered in his seat at the guard station, victim of another gunshot wound. In all, the assailant fired 15 rounds from a 9mm handgun, but no bullet casings were left behind. It is assumed that the shooter took the time to pick up each one as he progressed in the robbery.
"I worked with all of those guys," Langston remembered saying as Elizabeth paused to wipe her eyes.
"The robber just appeared. We had no warning," one of the bank employees recounted. "We were counting the money, and the next thing we knew, there was a gun pointed in our faces. The intruder appeared to be familiar with the bank's procedures and knew the timing and process for assembling cash from all the branch offices at this central location to be counted and bundled. Bank employees described the robber as calm while he tossed them two empty duffel bags and ordered them filled with the uncounted cash on the table." "That was really smart," said the assistant manager, "because that uncounted cash wasn't yet bundled with the security monitors." After locking the bank employees in the vault, the murderer walked out with almost $500,000.
The Denver Post was the first to coin the phrase Mother's Day Massacre, and by Monday evening, every news outlet was using the moniker as well. The city was unsettled, police were on edge, and Langston, along with all of those in Five Points, the heart of Denver's black community, prayed that the perpetrator was not one of their own. Speculation was that it was an inside job, which is why the police showed up on Langston Brown's doorstep that Monday afternoon. The detectives took his statement as to his whereabouts over the weekend and left. Langston remembered the relief they felt a week later when the authorities announced that they had a suspect in custody, a former police officer who had moonlighted off and on at the bank.
"I worked with him too," Langston remembered telling Elizabeth. "He was ex-military. Straight-laced, crew-cut dude, but I never..."
9 months later, though, the Post's headline read, "Acquitted."
"Langston, can you believe it?"
Elizabeth's disbelief had been palpable.
"Those high-priced pinstripes got him off with their bag of tricks," Langston had told her.
Langston remembered when he and the guys at the barbershop watched as newly appointed Mayor Stash went on television touting the fairness of the justice system and threw his support behind the exonerated ex-cop. He announced that he was putting Detective Slager, a decorated officer with an uncanny knack for solving crimes, on the case. It was Slager who zeroed in on Langston, and within a month, Slager had him behind bars. His name, Langston Brown, led every newscast and became synonymous with the hideous event. He slammed his fist down again, as he remembered the most troublesome fact of his case. Every witness said that the murderer was white.
The Loneliest Monk. "Sit back and grab your elixir of choice," said the late-night radio host. "Up next, we have the one, the only, the Loneliest Monk."
As round midnight began to play, something rare happened. Eli smiled. To him, the name Thelonious Monk sounded like the loneliest monk, which was an apt description of himself. It was the early 90s, and hip-hop was the rage, but in Eli's mind, jazz gave birth to...